All right, and let me get my tape rolling. All right, and first, just so I can more easily identify voices later on the tape, Mr. Campbellman, could I have you say hello and introduce yourself?
I'll be glad to say hello, and my name is Max Campbellman. Does that voice level all right with you?
That looks great.
Okay.
And Mr. Lampe?
So I'm John Lampe, Director of East European Studies at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars.
Okay. Thank you very much for being with us both. I'd like to ask first, Mr. Lampe, your impressions. I understand that you were at a Balkan press forum yesterday?
Yes, I was.
And could you give me your impressions of that?
Well, I think this Balkan press forum shows the interest not only on the official side, Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, in addressing the emerging democratic prospects in Serbia and really elsewhere throughout southeastern Europe, but also a full house of very interested people with not Bosnia, but Belgrade being the center of attention.
Okay. And Mr. Campbellman, could I have you comment on any observations or any comments you'd like to make on the latest developments as recently as yesterday?
Yes, I'd be glad to do that. The American people have got to appreciate that this area of the Balkans is really the last remaining area on the European continent which is striving and in a transition to a democracy. It is still being ruled by an authoritarian leader who resists giving up power and has been delaying the transition. But I believe the transition to a democracy is underway, and that's what we're witnessing and observing in the headlines that reach us every day.
And are both of you confident that that transition to a democracy will occur, that President Milosevic will step down?
Well, I can't be confident, but if I had to bet, I'd bet that Milosevic and his Socialist Party and the strange other party that his wife has founded will in fact be defeated in the November elections. But this is a clever politician that will continue to maneuver and does hold certainly a monopoly on state television. Also, we need to see just what use the opposition can make of these municipal victories and administrations once they're in place.
Let me comment, if I may, about that. There's really nothing inevitable, in my opinion, in history. But if you look at Europe, what you do see over the last few years since the end of the Cold War is a kind of tidal wave of movement toward human dignity, toward democracy. And we're seeing that in the former Yugoslavia, and we see it in Belgrade, which is, of course, the capital of Serbia. Indeed, the movement, and I was there a few weeks ago, the movement even exceeds the expectations of the leaders of the opposition. They didn't expect to see an outpouring of tens and sometimes hundreds of thousands of people, ordinary folk, demonstrating in a quiet way, but walking and protesting the authoritarian government. So that we hope that this transition can take place peacefully without violence. And certainly that should be the effort of the United States and the effort of the rest of Europe.
And do both of you believe that it is largely the demonstrations by these ordinary people that have made the difference?
Oh, I think that makes the difference, although the votes in the municipal elections started it, showing that the urban population of Serbia had enough, realized that in fact they were missing this transition that, as Ambassador Campbellman said, has been underway elsewhere in Eastern Europe since 1989. And so the hard school that I think a lot of the Serbian public and some of the opposition leaders have been through in the last 5 years has now taught them that there's just no other way but to go ahead with this transition, and with good humor and in a peaceful way that I would agree did carry these demonstrations in size and imagination and the kind of humorous rather than nationalist slogans that really make it something extraordinary.
I'd like to add one word here, and that is that the motivation behind the demonstration is twofold. It does reflect a desire on the part of the people who are demonstrating, and really they're large numbers, and if you notice, the church has also expressed itself, and the students have also expressed themselves. But it is obviously, on the one level, a push for democracy and human dignity. But there's another level that we should not ignore, and that is they are feeling the effects of economic deprivation. And what the United States and Europe has done, it has deprived this authoritarian leader of an opportunity to get the kind of financial help which his country needs. And the result has been economic deprivation for a great many people, which makes it more possible for them to demonstrate. And the fact that Europe and the United States are united in trying to achieve freedom and democracy there is very helpful.
Well, that does make a difference. It's very clear that the outer wall of financial sanctions will not be lifted for the Milosevic regime, and there are no illusions among the population that Europe or the United States has any lingering support for that regime because it guarantees stability in the area or still less enforcing the terms of the Dayton Agreement.
However, do either of you expect Mr. Milosevic to go quietly?
Well, that's a good question. He has demonstrated over the years a kind of guile, a kind of canniness, which has permitted him to survive. And the reason there is some skepticism on the part of the opposition within Belgrade to what he is now doing is they're wondering what's going to come up next from up that sleeve of his. And I think that's what worries them, because he is really a master of that. We'll see. I don't think he will move toward violence. First of all, the army has indicated that it does not wish to be a part of any violence. The church has indicated that they are unhappy with Milosevic. You know, I had the occasion when I was there a few weeks ago to meet with a number of the government officials, the people who are part of the Milosevic entourage, and I remember saying to them that they have a choice. The tidal wave is there. Now, they can either follow the example of Romania, where Mr. Ceausescu, who was the leader, resisted the tidal wave and he got drowned. Or they can do what the Polish leader did, Mr. Jaruzelski, which is to ride the crest of the wave and arrange for a peaceful transition. And as I said to these government officials, you know, the choice is really totally up to you. And I cannot understand for the life of me why it's in your interest to get drowned. It's indeed in your interest and in the interest of your country and in the interest of the Serb people to ride the crest and help in the transition toward democracy. I don't know whether Milosevic understands that or whether Milosevic will be guided by that. And it's quite possible that if these demonstrations continue and the process continues, that'll be out of his control.
What about the issue of war criminals? Do you think he will have a hand and that he will turn over some of these war criminals?
Well, there are two problems or two issues there, and I know John Shattuck's going to raise the issue of war criminals in his forthcoming visit to Belgrade, but first of all, there is the actual leverage or power that Slobodan Milosevic would now have in Bosnia to, in fact, see that any of these leading people indicted are handed over. I don't think he has the leverage to do that. I wouldn't know whether his calculation would be that he'd win more support from what he assumes to be still his core nationalist group by continuing to hold out on that score, or possibly to calculate that simply by handing over the few people that are in Serbia, that that might get the outer wall of financial sanctions lifted. But I don't think that will do it in itself, so that I myself don't see the war crimes issue as one that's offers as much a chance to really do anything inside Serbia. I think in Bosnia and Croatia, it does remain an extremely important issue.
Well, I cannot predict what Milosevic will do. I do know that in Dayton, he agreed to cooperate in turning over the war criminals to The Hague so they can stand trial. And I am convinced that the United States and Europe should insist that he do that as a condition for any kind of cooperation on our part with him and his regime or any proposal that he submits. If the world and if Europe in the future is going to have any kind of stability, we've got to recognize that people have to be held accountable for their crimes. And if the current process gets ridiculed or cheapened through disuse or being ignored, we're setting back the course toward stability and justice in Europe. So I believe very strongly we've got to insist that he do what he can to help bring those people to trial.
There's a further issue, too, of people inside Serbia who should be on the indicted list and are not. The militia leader Arkan being number one. And that raises the separate issue of enough financing and energy and attention to the Hague process to see that it, in fact, can go ahead and do more than it's done so far.
Nancy?
Yes.
It's the engineer. I'm sorry, I have to break in because we have the next station on the line.
Okay.
Although, we since we got started late, we can offer you a few more minutes at 3:15 Eastern Time if you wanted to call back. But,
I've got a meeting at 3, so that's...
Okay, sorry.
Okay, well, thank you both very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And now, actually, we need to move right into the next one. It's the Voice of America. Let me bring them up. And go ahead, VOA.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Terry Wing here over the VOA studios in Washington. Mr. Campbellman, Mr. Lampe, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's begin with Serbia. Does the fact that this legislation has now been passed, Mr. Kempelman, mean that we are, or Mr. I don't care who takes it, I'll let you guys determine. Does it mean that that this will eventually lead to the opposition formally taking office in these 14 government cities and towns?
Well, it certainly looks as if it means that. You do appreciate, of course, that the opposition is still skeptical about it. They keep wondering whether Milosevic has another trick up his sleeve. But from our point of view, I think we should welcome this step and we should help them move forward. What they're finding, which incidentally may be an indication that Milosevic intends to turn over power, what we're finding is that the treasuries of these municipalities have been depleted. And that leads me to believe that the old order has taken the money and made some use of the money because they understood they wanted the new people not to have that money. So it may be that even though we regret the stealing that took place, if it was stealing, it may be a sign that they're acknowledging the democratic victories of the opposition.
Yes, I worry, in fact, that those limited economic resources are going to make it hard for the Zajedno governments to make much of an impact economically. But What we do need to concentrate now on is their access to the local television and radio that should be their right following these municipal victories. And we know from at least one town where the Milosevic regime previously made a concession that there'll probably be some effort to merge those municipal medias into the Milosevic-controlled state network. And I think that's the most immediate challenge for the coalition.
Well, one wonders if Mr. Milosevic didn't just hang these out there so that, or give the opposition enough rope so they could hang themselves, so to speak, considering the terrible condition that most of the economy is in.
Well, this is a calculation that a number of the best observers that I talked to in Belgrade really wondered why he had not simply done this in November, let the municipal regime struggle with economic problems without international press coverage, without this mushrooming mobilization of the population that has taken even the leaders of the opposition of the coalition by surprise. So it may be too late for him to leave the opposition to hang out to dry.
Mr. Kampelman, let me ask you, is Mr. Milosevic now someone that the international community can deal with once again?
Not yet, certainly, in my opinion. For me, there'd be two basic requirements. One would be that he undertook to do what he said in Dayton, which is to take the war criminals and arrange for them to be brought to The Hague where they can stand trial. He has not done that. He has indeed, in effect, protected the indicted war criminals. And the second condition, in my opinion, should be his willingness to open a dialogue with the opposition, under which democratic governance could be instituted. And this means opening up the media to the opposition, and that includes radio, television, as well as newspapers, and permitting the political opposition to function, so that the next elections, which I believe are scheduled for later this year, that this next election has to be an honest one. If he is prepared, in my opinion, to do both of those fundamental things and take both of those steps, I certainly would have myself no problem in recommending that a dialogue with him be entertained by the United States and by the countries of Europe.
Go ahead, Mr. Lampe.
These are two considerable conditions, and opening up the state television and radio so that there can really be a level playing field for these November elections, it's asking a lot, but I think the Milosevic regime and advisors need to be advised that that, plus the issues of Dayton compliance, are really both still there if there's going to be any discussion of lifting that outer wall of financial sanctions.
Well, let me ask you this way. Is the heat off on Milosevic now? Can he pretty much go back to operating the way things were?
Well, I don't think so. I think he's waited too long. I think the international media and the urban population of Serbia are too engaged, and there is a momentum inside those urban strata, not just the students, the professionals, and even individual workers too. They don't dare come in groups to the demonstrations because they'd be dismissed. But that's a momentum that I think cannot be stopped now.
Gentlemen, is Bosnia-Herzegovina fair game today?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, well, I'd like to get some reaction to what's been happening in Mostar over the past few days. NATO troops have had to be called out to separate the Muslims from the Croats. Your feeling about what's really going on there?
Well, I'm distressed to be reminded that the Croatian regime in what they would call Herceg Bosna continues to be a law unto itself, and that apparently up to 100 Bosnian Muslims have been cleansed from the western area around Mostar, with also following a very ugly confrontation at a grave site where visiting Muslims from the eastern side were set upon, with, alas, not the kind of apology or pressure on that Herceg Bosna Croatian, a set of officials, if you can call them that, from the Croatian government, where the same kind of pressure that we ask from Milosevic into the Bosnian Serb side, we've got to ask from Zagreb, and I've not seen that forthcoming.
I'd like to add, if I may, that we should have no illusions about the Dayton agreements. They were very important in stopping the savage butchery, the war that was prevailing and really getting totally out of hand. But they did not and could not, in my opinion, that quickly establish the conditions for peace. They could set forth standards which ought to be achieved. But you are dealing, you have to understand, with three groups. And certainly two of those groups, the Croats and the Serbs, are authoritarian groups. That is, they are not Democrats. Milosevic, who negotiated for the Serbs, we know is an authoritarian figure. And Tudjman, who heads up the Croats, is in many ways has a fascist background. And is not anybody we could call has abandoned his aspirations, his nationalist aspirations. What's really going to happen is some distinguished funerals in the near future. And our hope would be that out of those distinguished funerals can come some movement toward peace and stability. It's our job, a diplomatic job, is by no means over. And when I say our, I include ourselves in the United States along with the rest of Europe, because the Balkans are crucial to stability in Europe. We still have to, we can't simply say it's theirs to work out. We have to help them work it out, and we have to do this with diplomatic energy.
And so that's true not just in on the ground in Bosnia with the American troops obviously there, but also looking for ways to work with a democratic Croatia and Serbia that are, in fact, not in place yet. A democratic Serbia by the end of this year would put a lot of pressure on the Croatian side, that is for sure. But I think one thing to be meditated upon is that the united NATO S4 presence there in Bosnia is... it's still important, but I feel we ought to pay more attention to the civilian side, which is terribly difficult, reconciling those three groups, and that's a process that needs to go better than it's going.
Gentlemen, I only have 80 seconds left to talk to you here. I was going to ask you what you thought might happen with Brčko, but of concern to another of my colleagues was an article in the front of the New York Times today about Serbs being involved in training refugees for combat in, of all places, Zaire. Does that surprise you, either one of you?
No, there are dogs of war that have come out from the Serb side, the Croat side, some that have found their way into Bosnia on the Bosnian on the Bosnian government side. I don't think that's connected particularly to what's going on in the region that ought to remain our focus.
Okay. But this is why Europe and the United States cannot simply assume that it's not our concern, that we must not get involved in it, because these things have a way of spreading their germs, and we've got to contain them and stabilize it.
The worst elements, in other words, that have come forth in the wars of Yugoslav succession, they are a threat, and now the task on the ground is to find a way to cut off the worst elements and let the best ones come forward.
Mr. Lampe, Dr. Lampe, Ambassador Kampelman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello? Let's see. Well, I wonder if that's still the VOA and they haven't canceled, or if this is the next group. I'm going to cancel.
I'll open the door.
Yeah. Hello. Would that be WBEZ? Hello.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay, Gretchen.
Yeah.
Oh, there is something definitely blipping there in the left channel.
Hang on. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Hello, Gretchen. This is the engineer in Washington. I hear you just fine. Hello, Gretchen.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm still not hearing, but I'm seeing great level movement.
Now, what do you see?
Hello. Great level movement. I actually am.
Still not hearing you, whoever's talking.
Okay.
I appreciate seeing the little needle move back and forth. And he's the vice chairman of the board of directors of the U.S. Institute for Peace, and he recently served as a U.S. member of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe delegation that went to Belgrade. And thank you both for joining us today on Worldview.
Okay.
First of all, I was wondering if you could tell us what you think about Slobodan Milosevic's perspective now. He's seeing that the opposition is still marching, and I'm sure he thought that the opposition would stop marching after the victories were restored. Do you think that the opposition is going to be pushing too far here? Are they pressuring too much Slobodan Milosevic, or are they going to actually get a change in leadership or government?
I think they need to keep going, not to stop now, and in fact let what would be a kind of fanciful scenario for Milosevic, just to have the demonstrations and the pressure and the international attention go away. Because for one thing, just having these municipal governments in place does not assure that they have the access to the local television and radio that is the biggest single prize in those victories, and assuring that is going to take some time.
I would like to add the following also. I think the decision may even be beyond the control of the leaders of the opposition. They were surprised by the size of the demonstration. I was there, I spoke with the three leaders, and it was clear to me, and I walked actually along with the demonstrators on the streets of Belgrade, it was clear to me that these were not people responding to instructions from some higher authority. These were people who were expressing frustration with their way of life, expressing hope for themselves and their children, and many of them, I was there on a Saturday, were walking with their children, a kind of gala, a carnival atmosphere, and they were attempting to show displeasure and a desire for a government based on human dignity. And the fact that these 14 elections have now been legitimized by the parliament is a very important step forward, but it is not yet reaching the goal line. And we know very well that the way you score these things is by reaching the goal line and scoring a touchdown. And they have not yet done so. They're far from it. There's going to be an election later this year for the head of state. Mr. Milosevic, the current authoritarian leader, has indicated that he would abide by the provision of law which says he shouldn't run again. Opposition wonders, will he abide by it? I suspect he probably will abide by it. In which event, the election will take place, which will really determine who scores the touchdown. And our hope is, and I say our hope, meaning the United States and Europe and all of us who believe in democracy, our hope is that next election will be a free election, and we'll watch it, and will be another move forward toward democracy. And of course, then and only then can those of us who believe in democracy claim victory.
And let me add here that I think what the Milosevic camp is intending to do is to put up a second set of goalposts in the form of the presidency of the Yugoslav Federation, previously powerless, relatively powerless, but a position that he's now announced that he would run for and then try to shift some relatively less powerful figure in to be the president of Serbia. Even then, I think this tactic may not protect Milosevic and his regime from an election loss, but it's going to take a lot of work and attention by the Zajedno coalition from now up until that goal line in November.
Do they have help in Montenegro, where Serbia is aligned with to form Yugoslavia? Are there votes for the opposition there? Is there Milosevic support there?
I think there are votes for the opposition there, and at the same time, the current president of Montenegro, who shouldn't run again, has been proposed as the prime minister of Serbia under the new Milosevic ticket. Whether this is going to add many votes either in Montenegro and Serbia, however, is open to some doubt, and it's not clear that that Momir Bulatovic would in fact take that position. But you can see Milosevic maneuvering in this sort of current endeavor.
The man is a survivor, and we have to understand that as a survivor, he's rather canny. The important thing is for us, who are on the outside now, but whose favor he seeks, because he needs financial help, and he needs dignity, and he needs status, and we should not afford him financial help or dignity or status until such time as we are convinced that we have a democracy there, one that is based on the concept of human dignity. And that means he'll have to get out.
I wonder if you could both address something that is a more regional concern. The entire region, we've got protests in Albania going on and Bulgaria, and we've had a change in leadership in Romania, and the entire region there in the Balkans seems to be going through a crisis state or a transitional state. And at the same time, the U.S. and its allies are proposing to extend NATO membership to some of the countries in Eastern Europe. There's fears about creating a new dividing line. Do you think that that at the same time the U.S. is proposing something like NATO expansion, perhaps they should propose something comprehensive, some comprehensive way to address the Balkan issue, either the European Union or the United States, and really try to help the forces that are changing the region?
Let me see if I can put this in perspective. First, let me say that in the other countries you've mentioned, the changes that are taking place within a democratic framework. There are elections. There is a press that the opposition has access to, and it includes television as well as newspapers. There's political opposition. And we're seeing a healthy development of this opposition. So I wouldn't be too concerned about what's happening in Bulgaria or Albania or Romania. These are natural developments as a people learn to govern themselves. And that's quite different from what you're seeing in the former Yugoslavia. Now, with respect to your question, the United States is indeed attempting now, very quietly, to work out some kind of economic integration within all of the Balkans. Our representative is quietly going around talking now to each of these Balkan countries, and he tells me with some measure of success. So that we are trying to develop some kind of economic integration. None of those countries can survive economically unless they integrate one with another and cooperate one with another. Now, this is not confused by our desire to enlarge NATO. I think our desire to enlarge NATO is conducive to more democracy, because what we are saying to all the countries of Europe, particularly the former Warsaw Pact countries, is, look, you no longer are tied with an umbilical cord to the former Soviet Union. You've all wanted to be free. If you become free, if you become a democratic society, you can, in time, become a part of the Western institutions. And what we're now thinking of is bringing in perhaps Hungary and Poland and the Czech Republic, all three of which are healthy democracies. And I think if that happens, the other countries may say to themselves, well, we have a shot at it too down the road. And I think that's healthy and encouraging rather than an area of confusion.
And now let me add that this Southeast European Cooperative Initiative that's been discussed for the last year or so, I think it's starting to take greater shape. And I think one of the tasks for the second Clinton administration is to address that initiative more directly, and also with a very important governmental change in Athens, so that there is a government in Greece, a European Union member, a NATO member, that I think can be a very important part of this cooperative initiative now.
Do you think that this kind of initiative can speak to Russia and the problems they have with a redivided Europe, that we can persuade them that we're not trying to redivide Europe, we're trying to help all of Europe here?
I'm not concerned that there is as much Russian influence or desire to penetrate the Balkans as some old friends in Belgrade and Sofia who feel that that's just going to happen for historic reasons. I don't think there's a strong Russian interest or advantage in that connection. But at the same time, for the Russian side to feel entirely left out as a great power, that's not good either. And the way that the Russian forces with I-4 and now S-4 in Bosnia have worked very comfortably, very successfully, to the satisfaction of Russian authorities, that shows that there can be a constructive connection with Russia as well.
Max,
I'd like to add here, if I may, that I do think the United States made an error. I think we sent the wrong signals to Russia early on. I think we misled the Russians into thinking that they could stop the enlargement of NATO. And as a result of that, they obviously tried to stop the enlargement of NATO. A lot of their political leaders put themselves on the record as opposed. We did not make it clear from the very beginning that this was our purpose and our intention. You may remember that Mr. Yeltsin himself was in Poland, and when he was asked by Mr. Valenza how they would feel, he said he would have no objection to their joining NATO.
Do you think that the cost of this delay might be the ratification of START II?
I do not. I believe that they're bargaining, and they should be bargaining now with us on a new agreement between NATO and Russia. And I do believe that it's in the best interest of Russia to ratify START II and to begin negotiating on START III. And it's in our best interest as well.
Thank you both very much for joining us. Max Campbellman is the vice chair of the board of directors for the U.S. Institute of Peace, and he recently served as a U.S. member of the Organization for Security and Cooperation delegation to Belgrade. And John Lampe is the director of East European Studies at the Woodrow Wilson Center for International Scholars and joins us on an often regular basis to talk about Yugoslavia. Thanks a lot, John and Max Campbellman.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Okay.
Bye-bye.
One more.
Oh, I'm here as well.
That's fair.
Okay.
50-50.
50-50, exactly.
Yes, she's the Srpska reč.
Okay, can we start maybe in 10 seconds or something like that?
Yes.
Okay, then in 10 seconds. And I'm not going to introduce you, etc. I'll do it later. Anyway, it's going to be a broadcast tomorrow on South Slavic Languages Service. Okay, my first question is related to the Milosevic's chances for survival, political one survival, of course. He is in a tricky position, I think. On one side, he has to accept opposition's rules, and on the other, if he accepts it, he will lose the power. Is he going to survive this time? What do you think, Mr. Lampe?
I think it's less than 50-50 that he will survive. he's not accepting all the opposition's demands and the real level playing field toward a November set of presidential elections yet. That would involve access to state television, the state radio. But I think that being seen to have given in on these municipal elections after trying to hold off and wait out the demonstrators and wait out the international community, and having lost on both scores with the momentum growing inside the country and united response from the international community saying you don't guarantee anything that deserves your continuing this sort of authoritarian regime, it puts him on the defensive and surely in the most dangerous position for survival that he's ever faced.
May I ask the same question, Mr. Kapelman?
Yes.
You were in Belgrade as a member of OSCE mission.
Yes, I was. And my answer to your question would be that a lot's going to depend on the firmness with which the United States and Europe treat Mr. Milosevic. If he has a feeling that Europe is flexible about this issue and that he doesn't have to make all the concessions toward democracy and free elections, he won't.
So you are in favor of, let's say, stronger political pressure to him?
I am. I'm in favor of maintaining it. I think it's the political pressure with respect to the 14 election districts that finally led him to make the concession he did. If you recall, there were all kinds of soundings about, well, maybe we'll let the opposition win Belgrade, or maybe we'll let the opposition win everything except Belgrade. Maybe we'll run elections again. All kinds of efforts on his part to compromise the issue so he doesn't have to face it head on. And fortunately, the United States and Europe simply said no. And I think this is one of the important results of the Gonzalez mission to Belgrade.
It is pretty clear for, I'm sure, for you and for all the experts who has been making analysis about the Balkan situation, that one of the Milosevic stronghold is media, controlling the media. If opposition take power, it will be probably the first task of opposition to take control, actually to open up the media, if I may say something like that. Mr. Lampe, you have just come back from Serbia. Is the opposition aware that their real power is not going to be so strong and that actually they have one real chance and that's open up the media?
Oh, I think so. There's going to be a tremendous effort that I hope will receive full international support to take the local television and radio access that should come with these municipal victories and secure them, because I do look for the Milosevic regime to try to shift those local media into the state network, as was attempted in Kragujevac. And so that's the first bridge to cross. Already in Belgrade, we should note that the opposition press is selling more papers combined than Politica and the rest of the official press, as amazing as that may seem. But the electronic media are absolutely crucial to a level playing field for these November elections. And so I think the opposition's well aware that it has to press ahead on that score. And then for the international community, access to the state television itself has got to be opened up in some kind of democratic way.
I think this is going to be the next internal crisis there, the issue that you have raised. But, you know, I don't think in modern technology that a monopoly of information is any longer available to any government. The access to internet and to these world webs is so widespread that
don't forget foreign broadcasters.
Well, I understand that, but I also understand there are certain hard technical realities that cannot be ignored. And any society that thinks that it can have a monopoly of information is waging a losing battle.
Well, at the beginning of this interview, we were talking about the Milosevic chances for political survival. I would like to ask you another question. Is there serious chances for Serbian opposition to survive as a unit, opposition together, after they take power in those 14 local communities? Because there are a lot of experts are thinking about it. Are they capable to stay together after the protest?
Well, this is a serious issue, but in my conversations with several of the leaders and also political scientists, in Belgrade, there's a very clear recognition by the coalition that they must take some special measures to meet together, to coordinate, to have, in fact, more of a united political force than they've had so far. And I think they're buoyed also by the groundswell of support they've received. So they're at least going to try to pull together in a more coherent way as we head toward November.
Mr. Kapelman, what do you think about that? Are the Serbian opposition aware that they need to lead Serbian society to be faced itself in a mirror? That actually, if they want to be part of the democratic world, they need to be faced with the crimes committed, committed on behalf of Serbian nations.
Let me say that Felipe Gonzalez and I and the others who were there met on three different occasions for hours at a time with the opposition. And the questions you're raising are exactly the questions that we addressed to them. And all three of the current leaders may not have started out as firm Democrats, but I am convinced that as a result of their experience, as a result of the demonstrations really going far beyond them, that they are convinced now that they have got to learn and to accept the notion of democracy. And we question them very aggressively. I am not being Pollyannish about this. Let us assume that they could take over the government in a national election. I'm not suggesting to you they may not have differences among themselves or that problems may not arise. But until such time as they achieve their victory, I think all three understand they must keep together. And I think they will keep together.
Thank you. Can we turn a little bit our attention towards Croatia? Croatian president has just announced local elections in Croatia. What are the chances of the ruling party in Croatia to keep the power at the moment? Can we expect something similar in Croatia?
I think it may not be as widespread, but the huge crowds that came out in Zagreb to demand that Radio 101 stay on the air, and they
120,000 people actually
succeeded in that regard, I believe, to the displeasure of the Croatian president when he returned from the United States. But I think that party in the elections of last year had already lost the parliamentary seats in all of the major Croatian cities, and even in the aftermath of the presumed Aluja victory, only won 43%. So that I think the opposition in Croatia now faces the same challenge as in Serbia. They have to come together and present a democratic alternative. They have to respond to what I think is a democratic tide that's running in Croatian society as well, and a realization that some of the nationalist goals and excesses and also war crimes in the course of these wars of succession are something that a democratic Croatia is going to have to face as well.
Mr. Kapelman, do you share this opinion?
I do share this opinion. And it's complicated there in the fact that Mr. Tejman is obviously seriously ill. And I think that when you're in that kind of a situation and your leader is that sick, I think it does something to motivation and to energy, so that I would feel myself that I would agree with Dr. Lampe.
Croatian hardliners still control Bosnian Croat leadership. Are they, what do you think, ready to provoke new fightings in Bosnia in order to stay in power?
Well, it seems they're certainly ready to continue homogenizing their turf from this expulsion of up to 100 Bosnian Muslims just in the last several days. I think to take on the their partners in the Federation in any kind of wider fighting is unlikely. I don't know that they'd get the Croatian army support they did in the past, and certainly they would face the wrath of the S4 presence on the ground. But that lack of offensive danger doesn't mean that inside Herceg Bosna, inside the Croatian part of the Bosnian Federation, the internal conditions remain most unsatisfactory, most undemocratic.
There's also one other change, and that is that the Muslims are now militarily stronger than they have ever been in the past. And I think that this is a reality which those who have aspirations against them must come to appreciate.
Is it realistic to expect that maybe the Muslim radicalism could increase in the coming months?
It is possible. They certainly are being provoked
Definitely,
to do so.
Yes.
And the presence of the Iranian influence is something not to be ignored, and is, I think, one of the regrettable byproducts of the fact that the United States insisted on maintaining the arms embargo against Bosnia in recent years. This is my personal opinion.
This is a struggle inside the Izetbegovic government, and it could go the wrong way. And to that Iranian presence, I think perhaps still more disturbing are various mujahideen who come in from opponents of Arab regimes, often with experience in Afghanistan, and some of those people are, alas, still on the ground and have some allies. So the demands inside the Bosnian government framework and for committed Democrats, people committed to the multi-ethnic side like Haris Salajic to come forward, that's a balance that still remains to be determined.
And my last question is, as far as it has already been mentioned, Mr. Tuđman is very ill. Izetbegovic cannot work in his full capacity as well. Milosevic is becoming a loser. So do you expect that the world will be faced with new leadership in Bosnia, Croatia, and Trump Yugoslavia in coming, if not months, then years for sure?
Oh, I think that's for sure, and I think that's to be welcomed. I think some of the younger people who've been involved in the demonstrations in Belgrade, whose names we now do not know, are going to come forward. I was trying to persuade some of my more traditionally minded acquaintances over there that despite the youth, some of these people were going to come forward because the younger generation realizes that a democratic transition and a reconnection to Europe is absolutely the only way ahead.
Mr. Kapman?
I agree fully with that analysis. What is important for us to do now, and I now use the word us to encompass Europe and the United States, we must develop contacts with these younger people, these newer people. Certainly in the United States, we have something called the National Endowment for Democracy. And I know that that endowment is developing contacts with the younger leadership in that area. I think it would be a good thing for the same thing to take place from countries like Germany and UK and France. To develop, to strengthen, to invite these people to visit their countries, to be exposed to democratic institutions. We must identify ourselves and help those people achieve the dignity that they seek.
Give them a chance.
Give them a chance.
Mr. Lampe, Mr. Kapman, thank you very much
thank
for this
you.
Dinner.
Thank you.
Thank you, bye.
Matter of fact, I just had lunch with Carl Gershman. That's why it's in my mind, because we talked about it.
Yeah, because I was...